You are listening to AWOL Radio here on 102.7 CKMS Radio Waterloo, radiowaterloo.ca, broadcasting to all of Waterloo Region.
On this episode of AWOL Radio, recorded June 30th, 2017, and after a quick rant about Trudeau's massive increases to the military budget, we speak with Prof. Steven Svensson about Canada 150 and the unproductive fictions around the establishment of this settler colonial state that underlies racist Canadian nationalism. See grandrivermc.ca for more podcasts from AWOL Radio.
Dan Keller in studio with you today on AWOL Radio. We were playing a little bit to remind people the first little bit about how Canada is continuing its colonial violence and imperial war as Justin Trudeau announces billions in new funding for the military. Billions of new money for guns and bombs and, you know, whatever to kill and control and take over, of course, for our greedy resource industries. You know, every war, it's actually a pipeline war. Oh, it's actually because that's what we do around the world, is we go around the world and try to take others' resources against their will, usually, and without them, the people that were taking the resources who are from the land, they usually don't. They usually get screwed. Not get a fair deal. They usually get screwed one way or another. Just search Canadian mining companies. Don't look for Canadian sources on it. The Canadian news media seems to, like, I don't know if it's refuses to cover it, but they sure don't do a very good job on covering the atrocities undertaken by Canadian mining around the world. Of course, mining companies, 85% of global international mining companies are based in Canada, based in Toronto. The Toronto Stock Exchange is full of those type of murders. That was kind of an offshoot of just a little anger I'm feeling towards this billions more being spent on war. We could, like, you know, pay for everybody to have a house, pay for everybody to go to school. No. We need some more bombs. I don't understand Trudeau. They are bombs of empire, and it's almost Empire Day. Tomorrow, Empire Day, Dominion Day in Canada. Anyways, AWOL Radio. Today, for the last half of the show in studio, we have Steve Svensson with us again. Prof. Svensson, Doc Svensson. Back with us. It's been a few months since we had you in studio. Mm-hmm. And of course, the son's in studio as well, giving a big smile.
We ate a lot of mulberries, so it's pretty happy, I think. You happy with those mulberries?
Yeah.
Yes, good. It's mulberry season.
Yeah.
Just the other day, I tweeted out that the mulberries are ripening.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're ripe.
We're eating. What else is ripe, bud?
The cherries.
Yeah. Mm. What have we been picking at our house?
Strawberries, baby strawberries.
Yeah, we got wild strawberries. What else?
Plums.
Whoa.
Yeah, but what's across the street? What's across the road?
Oh, Saskatoons.
Yeah, we call them Saskatoons because we're from out west. But
service berries.
So yeah, all kinds of great stuff to forage out there. It's my favorite time of the year. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, to do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Canada Day is probably not my favorite time of the year, though, I guess. And we're supposed to be talking about that. I feel like I was kind of the poster boy for Canada when I was younger in my life, when I worked in the bush and I worked as a park ranger. People came up and thought, "Hey, that's Canada," but I have an ambivalent, like many Canadians, I have an ambivalent sort of relationship to Canada. And maybe just a little bit about me. I grew up in the North Okanagan on the traditional territory of the Splatsin people, or which we say in an anglicized way, the Smal Machine, which are part of the northern, or part of the Shuswap. And really grew up next to reserve, never really set foot on it, did drive through it, and kind of grew up with really, really negative messaging and thinking about the original people in that area. So, and I'll just say it bluntly, you know, I mean, a couple of things that I heard growing up, and that if I would even go back there, and as recently as 2012, I was back there for an extended time doing some teaching, and I heard these things again, where the only good Indian is a dead Indian, and The only thing we did wrong with the Indians was we didn't finish the job. So those are that's kind of the environment that I grew up in.
And still hearing.
And you can go back there and you can still hear that if you're white and you're in the right circumstances. And so people on Facebook yesterday, some people on my Facebook feed were going off about talking about hatred towards Canada Day and things Canadian, and I was just like, I called it horse shit, you know, and they actually deleted their post. But it was sort of like, are you kidding me? You're going to use words like hatred when there's been, you know, hundreds of years of genocide that have been attempted on these people and success, you know? I mean they're still here and they're still fighting back, and you're going to talk about hatred about Canada? Like, what about Canada? Lacrosse? Hockey? You know? I mean, these things that are really kind of at root Indigenous, you know? Like, what is Canada, right? It's, let's not entertain these fictions, you know? So I'm at a bit at the end of my rope with people, and I do, in one sense, I get the frustration because people tend to tie their identity to things like nationhood, unfortunately. And so I do kind of sympathize, because people do need a sense of who they are and where they come from, and we obviously, there's traditions that we want to practice together. But, you know, there's a reason why the original people are ticked off, you know, and they're asking to be listened to, and they deserve more than a hearing. They deserve, you know, to have restitution.
Right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, when people get on Facebook and start crying about, you know, what's all this anti-Canada Day stuff, you know, well, no, people just want to be heard. Right. Sorry, you know, and if you're a part of an oppressed group, you're going to want to be heard. And this hearing is long overdue. Right. So I say, you know, more power to the original people in getting their voices heard. I mean, because it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And you agree, eh, bud?
And then you see writers like Jonathan Kay, his mother Barbara Kay, writing how, you know, these hateful mobs of Twitter users that are Indigenous people or people that believe that Indigenous people are indeed humans beyond being, you know, Canadians, and they're like, oh, we're being mobbed by these people, and it's like, no, they finally have a voice, and they're telling you that your views are disgusting, that they're abhorrent, that they're racist, that they're white supremacist, that they're furthering the myths of Canadian supremacy, or that there's been nothing wrong, that we've, you know, made amends, that we've reconciled, look, we've started reconciliation processes. But they're not talking about returning the land. They're talking about, you know, what settlers can do to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
While still maintaining full control.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, I definitely see. I mean, it's interesting, and I grew up in that very kind of toxic environment, and I took it on board, and unfortunately, and then sort of had to work pretty hard to deal with that and come to terms with it, and then to kind of turn that around. And it's, when you grow up in a culture like that, it's often hard to resist. But really, if you want to be fair-minded, if you want to be just, if you want to think about, when I think about if there's anything kind of good about being Canadian, especially when we were recognized on the global stage, at least the way that we were recognized on the global stage, is that we were kind of fair, that we stood for justice. And if we can't stand for justice, what are we, you know? I mean, yeah, really. Yeah, yeah.
No, absolutely.
Toxic. Yeah, it's a toxic attitude, right, that people have, right? So, no, I mean, and so fortunately for me, I just wanted to talk about my uncle, because he was very much part of restitution and part of honoring agreements and treaties that, in particular, the government had with the original people. And he was a sort of a fierce, after he retired from the public service in British Columbia, he spent his remaining time working very hard to see that the wrongs that were visited upon the Indigenous people in that area were corrected. He was a deacon in the Anglican Church, and his whole thing was to have the artifacts returned to the Nisga'a people on the northwest coast. And so he largely spearheaded that kind of movement within the Anglican Church to have those artifacts returned. And he also wrote lots of letters and gave a major sort of deposition at the Oh, 19, way back 1997. 20 years is bad enough, right?
Right.
And it was his presentation to the Select Standing Committee on Aboriginal Affairs in Victoria on February 18th, 1997, as a private citizen. You know, and he talked about the long, sad history of special laws applying to Indigenous people, mostly detrimental to them, that were imposed by the colonial governments. So he, you know, mentioned things like in the early days of land grants, foreign newcomers could apply for a homestead, land ownership, but Indigenous people applying for their own lands were denied. You know, and was it legal? Probably, he says, but was it just or fair? No, it wasn't. Earlier in the century, Indigenous people began to go to court under white man's law to defend their land claims. This became embarrassing, so a law was passed making it illegal for them to raise money to hire lawyers. Like this, I mean, people don't know this history, and I think if they knew this history, they'd begin to think differently. So, I mean, any Canadians out there that are trying to understand what's going on and why the original caretakers of this land are rightly pissed off. You know, there's lots of articles floating around on the internet from really legitimate people that you could read.
Right.
And then you can tone down your own anger or feeling of that you're being deprived of something and give this a good hearing and listening, you know. And so, I mean, I just wanted to read a little passage, you know, from 20 years ago. And my uncle's, you know, he's been dead now for about 5 years. But I wanted to read this sort of passage that he had in this speech that he gave to the Standing Committee on Aboriginal Affairs. He says, "My point is that there's been a vast difference between what may have been legal and what was fair or just. All of these discriminatory laws were made by our predecessors without the people affected having any say or vote in the matter. Now, all of a sudden, when it's suggested that the original people might, through negotiation, achieve some say in determining what laws or regulations should apply within their treaty lands, we see people throwing up their hands in horror. One law for all, they say. Forget all the past. Let's just start from where the Indigenous people are today and apply one law. This is a totally unrealistic, catchy slogan, as our Constitution and the Supreme Court would quickly say. Was it Desmond Tutu who said in Africa, when you white people came to Africa, we had the land and you had the Bible? Now somehow we have the Bible and you have the land." And then my uncle goes on to say, "Now that we have the land, the fish, the timber, and the minerals in BC, and this was in BC, of course, are we afraid some racially based law might actually favor an Aboriginal person for a change? Maybe, in fairness, it's about time." You know, I mean, and it's kind of dated language that he uses, but that idea that there's been this historical injustice that's happened,
right,
and it needs to be redressed. And it's about time. This was 20 years ago. We still haven't addressed this. So when are we going to do it? And, you know, Canada Day is a perfect day to talk about this.
Very much so. And it's, we mentioned earlier, you know, and from your childhood and the atmosphere, the toxic atmosphere you grew up in terms of like the racism in your hometown and the area you grew up in, and that it exists today, the same kind of thing. And I think there's example after example where these things that your uncle was speaking of still exist today. Mm-hmm. They still exist today. I think it was very, very apt. I mean, in right now on Parliament Hill, there's people trying to erect a teepee beside the grand celebration stage for Canada 150, and getting pushed out and being arrested and then being able to put it up again. But security saying, well, maybe you have to take it down because security concerns. What kind of security concerns? It's the same things they've been saying for the last 150 years. It's the same kind of like, well, we don't know what you're doing in that teepee. It's the fear and it's the ability to turn other Canadians, oh, it's a security concern. Mm-hmm. Well, then, yeah, of course we have to get rid of that. And, you know, we can't have security concerns on our celebration day.
Mm-hmm.
What is the celebration? I think that's something we don't talk about with Canada Day. Like, what are we celebrating? You know, Canada as a nation state may have had some accomplishments, you know, or like within the nation state accomplishments occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Usually paid for by the mass of people that are Canadians or that are living within the borders through their taxes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
However, we don't talk about the horrible history through schools, the actual horrible history of the state, and what you were celebrating when you were celebrating Canada. I think we need to know it all, and we're talking about reconciliation, a time of reconciliation. Most Canadians are finding out some of these horrors for the first time now, like still now. You know, at some point in through my life, I found out about these things, but it wasn't through the education system.
No,
we learned about, you know, like, you know, some level, but it was never called oppression. It was never called colonialism. It was, you know, like, it was still based in, you know, like, terra nullis ideas of we found these people here and we helped you know, civilize and all of that. But we're still getting the same messages. Maybe they're changed a bit, but we see it, you know, through the media, through the reactions on Facebook. One of the tweets yesterday that came out from this putting up a teepee on Parliament Hill was one of the people told the reporters to, like, get out of here, white lady. You know, because she had the reporter asked a triggering question and a leading question and a disrespectful question when it comes right down to it. And then all of this, like, people are like, oh, I support native rights, blah, 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 except 100%, except for when they use language like this. You know, they're just flipping the script a little bit. People are, indigenous protesters, indigenous people are flipping the script a bit, and Canadians are like, oh, this racism, ah, I can't deal with it. It's a fragility.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Because people, they freak out, you know, it's a little poke, and they're just like, oh, you've murdered me.
No, that idea of white fragility is interesting, and Canadian fragility, and again, this is this issue with identity, you know. What are you tying your identity to? What does it really mean to be a Canadian? And I think it means participating in a particular history. I mean, we all have our histories, and we all have our sort of legacy, the legacy of history. So if we go back and we look at what the actual history was, you know, that should shape the way we think about being Canadian and shape our identity. And certainly it's shaped my identity now as a settler colonialist Canadian who likes to think of themselves as an ally to the original caretakers of this land. You know, I think if we want to rehabilitate what Canada is, you know, there's good things that people are doing and good things that people have done, and it's beyond being a Canadian. It's called being a decent human being. You know, like, what about tying our identity to practices that are noble, you know, that are good, you know, that are right? I mean, that seems like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of a nationalistic fervor.
Yeah, I mean, and let's just, I mean, it, people should be. I mean, I think we do as Canadians, we twig on this a little bit because we have something to compare it to south of the border, and you can sort of see what patriotism and nationalism has done, and. That kind of, I mean, talk about white fragility, you know, down there, and fear, and really kind of toxic identity politics, like, ugh, you know. So, I mean, we really have a clear image of what we don't want to be,
right?
You know, so I think their path should be, and I think by and large, it seems to me that we're getting there. I am hopeful that we're getting there because, I mean, people. Are coming along, and I'm able to have conversations on Facebook with these folks, whereas maybe 5 years ago I probably couldn't.
Right.
So people are asking questions. I mean, I thought it was really interesting when the whole Standing Rock thing was going down. People that I never expected that I would kind of understand as kind of people on the far right were in support of the people at Standing Rock, right? So, I mean, it could just be this anti-government sentiment that kind of transcends both left and right.
Right.
But it sort of is interesting to see that, you know, that there are people are coming around in a sense. But there's a lot more work to do, as we know.
Well, yeah, and today on Radio Waterloo, we were broadcasting the NCRA's series, Resonating Reconciliation, and it's something that couple years ago, 2015, 2014 maybe, it's a series of from across Canada radio stations put together half-hour, one-hour pieces, documentaries, and we need, like, one of the part of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was media needs to push these messages out. The media needs to get on it. I mean, we're a community radio station. We do have listeners, it turns out, around the world. I was looking at our map on our website, and like, you know, people are tuning in from New Zealand, people are tuning in from Europe, and they're tuning in. And on this radio station, we play a lot of this, and we try to we're trying to get the word out as much as we can. Of course, we're one little radio station, and then you have the mainstream channels that are pushing nationalistic representations and of Canada mostly. Mm-hmm. Some media outlets are, you know, these Indigenous people aren't celebrating Canada Day for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the smaller outlets, but not people, are still going to put the blinders on and party tomorrow.
Yes,
on Canada Day,
for sure.
And what is the celebration like? I think when, like, yeah, people, if you want to tie your identity to something good and like being a good, you know, just a good person, you do have to reflect on what you're celebrating.
Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the things that helped me in understanding kind of the systemic violence of colonialism and where Canada's role in that is, was really reflecting on all of the bad. Because without the bad, like you're hiding half your identity. If you're a Canadian, if you identify as Canadian,
mm-hmm.
and you're not talking about the all the bad, then you're like, you know, you're deluding yourself into, I don't know, a fake belief.
Which is what we do all the time anyways, really, right? But, you know, as so-called Canadians, a couple things we need to do. We need to kind of let go of these unproductive fictions. I mean, I'll call them unproductive fictions because the fiction of how Canada was founded, for example, not two founding peoples. No, it was founded by genocidal maniacs that tried to kill an entire population off systemically, you know, and wipe it out culturally. You know, that's our creation story, as it were, with regards to what Canada is. You know, it's not two founding peoples. No, I mean, and this idea, the symbolic erection of the teepee, I mean, should twig us into that. You know, there are more than two founding peoples here. There were many people that were here. I mean, originally, some of the history says these three people kind of got along together. Right. You know, in some of the accounts, at least, anyways. And then it's sort of when the need to extract ever more resources came along and people got in the way, that were in the way, right. They were eliminated because they were seen as not being human beings,
right. Yeah.
Or cast in that light. And so that's our history, you know. And so let's let go of these unproductive fictions and get to what's real, and then we can move somewhere positively. And more people need to do that. And that's the message that I'll be posting on Facebook, you know, tomorrow on Canada Day, essentially, right? Yeah. And yeah, get away from that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. Like, why be scared about
it?
Like,
right.
People screw up. You know, I mean, no, like, this is a major screw up. Yeah. You know,
it's a nation state.
Mm-hmm.
It's a capitalist colonial. Like, it's founded on a massive screw up. Let's look at this.
It's awful language to use, but in a way, I mean, it might be the way to get it out to people, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, how else can you grow other than looking at the errors you've made and violent colonialism?
Yeah, what, you wanted to say something, bud?
Just, like, that's just our history.
Yeah, no, I'm happy that the discussion is getting out more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in seeing what's going to happen across the country tomorrow. I mean, today there's Trans-Canada Highway outside of Winnipeg has been shut down or blockaded, protest picket, an information picket. People are letting people through. But talking about the Indigenous youth suicide crisis that's going across the country and talking about the water, the dirty water crisis that Indigenous people are facing across this country.
Mm-hmm.
There's this ongoing action on Parliament Hill with the teepee, and that's, you know, going to grow one way or the other. We'll see what happens tomorrow when a bunch of nationalistic Canadians get on Parliament Hill, and maybe, you know, I don't know, a little worried about what's going to happen actually, and to see, we're going to see some of this outpouring of real Canadian behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, we saw it in the video last week, where that woman was demanding a white doctor.
Right.
You know, like, we saw, like, that's some of the, that's the racism in Canada that's usually hidden.
Yes.
But this time a video got taken of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's protest tomorrow, I think there's going to be some pretty raw Canadian racism on display. Mm-hmm. We saw it during the Olympics in Vancouver. People would come out, were doing street protests, and people are coming out from the bars and, like, you know, waving Canadian flags and yelling. Usually pretty racist things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
no, I mean, and when people, I mean, we've seen in the States when people are emboldened like that, mm-hmm. and that has, some of that has for seeped sure. up this way as well. So yeah, you're probably right. We'll mm-hmm. see some of that, and hopefully we'll also see people intervening.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that'll be the dominant story in all of this.
Well, I think Twitter tomorrow is going to be an interesting place to spend some time. I might spend some time in the Twitter sphere and just watch the unsettling 150 hashtag, the Canada 150 hashtag, you know, resist 150 hashtag. There's a bunch going on. Unsettling.ca for people that want to check it out. We got to wrap the show up. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for taking us mulberry picking.
Hey, anytime. And this is AWOL Radio. I'll say bye to the people of Kitchener-Waterloo.
Bye-bye.
102.7 FM in Waterloo Region, RadioWaterloo.ca on the web. And that was our interview with Dr. Steven Svensson speaking about Canada 150. For more AWOL Radio, check out grandrivermc.ca.